Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Carsten, or some call me Rasta. I am a principal engineer at Samsung Electronics in Korea. That's where I live and work. As you can tell, I'm totally Korean. I have done quite a lot of work in the past. One of the things I did do, unfortunately for the rest of the world, is I founded the Enlightenment Project, so a window manager, and EFL, which is the toolkit behind it. So I'm sorry for you guys, you have to live with it now. If you have any questions, you can ask your questions at any time. I don't mind when you ask them, so put your hand up and try and get my attention if you have anything to say. So what is EFL, or now in actual Git, where the source trees are? There's an EFL tree and there's actually an elementary Git repository, which is separate. It is a toolkit to help write applications. It's somewhere in between GTK and Qt in terms of functionality and features. So it does have the whole widget set and all the graphics bits. In addition, some networking, some data storage, some dbus, et cetera, stuff. It is all written in C, good old plain boring C. It has had a relatively simple object model of its own in the past, where you have objects, you just delete them, they can have children, where they'll delete their children with a little bit of extra code. They can inherit interfaces from parents at some levels, et cetera, et cetera. And today, it actually is inside what you know as Tizen, deep down in the middle. So something like that. This is a very, very, very simplified diagram. It is not necessarily true of all Tizens, but this is what Tizen Mobile, what TV, and what Tizen Wearable look like. IVI would not have the native. The TV and wearables don't actually use the native. And IVI may have, for example, as of Tizen 3, might use things like Qt or something else for OEM apps. So in Tizen, your third-party apps, if you're an app developer, will sit on top of either a native toolkit or the web runtime. OEMs get to jump the next level down, and they can also use EFL and elementary. EFL itself looks something like this. You have a bunch of libraries, high level, sitting on top, doing everything from graphics, even audio, asynchronous I/O, dbus, graphics layout, etc., etc. A whole widget set at the very top, that's elementary. At the bottom, data structures, lists, and so on. Virtual machines, a compiler, some data structure handling, and something called EO. And that is kind of what I'll be talking about. This thing there. It's nice and short. It actually stands for the EFL object model. And now that's what we'll be covering. So we have had an ad hoc object system put in place. EO formalizes this. It puts it in everywhere. We had kind of pseudo objects that we built as we needed, all our timers, animators, our actual graphics objects. So from Evis, which is the canvas layer, all the way up. So Edge built on top of the Evis objects. You inherit a bunch of methods, so when you move, resize, and mess with them, the Edge code can override that and implement itself. Certain other ways of doing these functions. Elementary inherits yet another level up with elementary widgets, so your buttons and so on. And et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. We have lots of different stuff there. But it was done relatively ad hoc. EO now puts this all together with a single object model going all the way down, all the way to timers and animators, et cetera. It is done in C, not in C++. So all the core toolkit is still C. But what it does do is it starts to look a little bit more like a dynamic language rather than a C++ kind of world. You have now call safety. So if you call a method on an object that doesn't inherit or handle that interface, then you basically don't have any problem. It's not going to fall over and die. It won't detect at compile time. It does detect at runtime. if you access an object that is invalid, been freed, deleted, or is an object of the wrong type, that is also handled and safety is maintained. It deals with that. Now, the cool and interesting thing is that this object model actually translates directly to C++ in most ways. So we now are actually supporting generating bindings automatically without any extra human intervention directly into C++. So you can now use C++ with the same classes, methods, the same hierarchy, and the same method names, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, the same way you do in C. We are also going to be adding Lua soon as well. So as an object model, it actually does quite a bit. It does both single and multiple inheritance. It does plain interfaces. You can do mix-ins, build things on the fly. Every object is reference counted. You've got weak and strong references. You can have cross-references between objects, so if they one deletes, the other one will auto be deleted or vice versa. It does all the event callback handling. So if an object has an event, you can trigger it and it will call everyone who's registered for that event. Also deals with adding and deleting and managing the actual event handlers themselves. It deals with the whole parent hierarchy thing. You can add arbitrary data to objects, key value pair. So you've got some arbitrary key, you want to tag the data on the object. If you do it right, it'll get auto deleted if it's another object, when the object that has the data is deleted. You have all of this has runtime checks. So accessing an invalid object is actually safe. It's very unlikely to go wrong. And all the methods and classes are checked at runtime. So why? Well, everyone thinks, okay, you may have just reinvented GObject. No, because our base class is more extensive. It does do more than GObject does. It was intended to unify all of our existing ad hoc object stuff, so it has to have the same core features we already have. We don't actually have to write a lot of code ourselves. We now have code generators. So you write a file that defines your class, and your code is actually all generated for you, and just fill in the functions, fill in the squigglies, curly braces. We have all our method checks are runtime. So in something like GObject, it uses function pointers that are exposed from the object. If you were to cast it to something else, you can call the wrong function if you do the wrong casting. With ours, we don't do any casting at all. So we actually check if that method is available at runtime each and every time. We do a really, really elaborate bunch of object indirection, so you can no longer have an invalid pointer. So one of the reasons we now do indirections for pointers is that for many years, EFL has actually looked a lot like GTK in the G world. You have a pointer to an object, and when you try and access an object, we dereference that pointer if it's not null. And we go and look at a special number of bytes in the object. That's an int, about 4 bytes worth of data. And that has to have a magic value in there. And these values are different for every type of object. If it's the wrong type, we return and say, no, you can't do this. You safely return and don't do anything and complain on standard error. There is a slight problem with this mechanism, that if someone passes in an invalid pointer that's pointing to somewhere that is not real memory and you check your magic number, you crash. And the real problem here is that we keep getting bug reports filed that you have a bug in EFL, you have to go fix it. It's crashing during this magic number check there. And you have no idea how many times this happened, a lot. And it was actually quite annoying trying to explain, saying, no, it's not a problem here, you're passing in a garbage pointer. No, that didn't work. So what you do is you have to actually debug that person's application, find the bug, actually fix the bug for them to demonstrate that it's not your bug. So the real reason we do this now is to avoid this problem. Just because the backtrace ended in EFL, that's enough to say that it's an EFL bug, according to people. So we actually ended up spending something like 60, 70% of our time, instead of debugging EFL, we're debugging applications. And of course it takes longer because it's someone's code that you're not familiar with and you have to find their bug. It wastes our time, so that's a lot of time wasted. It also means that applications crash while a user is actually trying to do something useful. And users don't really take very kindly to an application magically disappearing from their screen when they're in the middle of doing something. They would probably prefer to have it gracefully degrade and go weird than have it just magically disappear. And it's also really annoying to have to keep telling people what backtraces are, how memory works, et cetera, et cetera. So we needed a solution that's safer. So this is what we came up with. So instead now, for compatibility, every object pointer looks like a pointer, but it's not. What we do, it's either a 32-bit or 64-bit value on 64-bit, in which we stuff an ID. And that ID is stealing an idea from Windows. We have a generation count. And Windows people actually had a really good idea there. And so you have the generation count, you have a table, and then a row entry. So every one of these gets split up. We go find the table it's in. We look at the row. The row also has a generation count with the object. If the generation counts don't match, that means the row has been recycled and a new object has been put there during a different generation of allocation. If the generation count matches and the row has a non-null entry, then we can actually go and access the actual object very, very safely. This means basically no more crashes ever again. Although the downside is it begins to look like a dynamic language. It looks more like your Pythons, JavaScripts, Luas, etc. of this world. So we only use the pointers, as I said, for compatibility. Because all our APIs return pointers, we still keep doing that for ABI purposes. So on 32-bit, we use 9 bits for the generation count. That means you have about a chance of 1 in 512 of, if you've recycled a row, of accidentally getting through the check. On 64-bit, it's an insanely very large number, 29 bits. So that's about 1 in 500 million of getting past that. That's assuming that that row entry in the table is not null and that that table actually exists. So if those don't exist, you never even get to that point. Even if a false positive sneaks through, we still do all the checking for methods. So if that object is the wrong object and it doesn't support that interface, it just happily goes, oh, no, you can't do that, and continues marching on safely. So it's not really worse than it was before, but it's a hell of a lot better. There's much less chance of something going wrong. And anytime something goes wrong here, you'll get a complaint out in standard error telling you, like, here, something has gone wrong. No more Spanx, actually. It's really boring now. And if you set an environment variable, it'll actually abort and crash, and you can go find your backtraces and figure out what went wrong. We've measured it at about 3 to 5%. So we've got a 3 to 5% hit. There is a little catch. We've changed how our APIs work where we can actually amortize this cost over several calls. We're not using that feature at the moment in our legacy application. By the way, that 3 to 5% includes a legacy wrapper, which is a normal C function that then calls this function that then actually does it. So including that wrapper plus the object dereference is about 3 to 5%. The only extra memory use are the tables. So it's like 200, 300K. The tables are really small, and actually they're quite small. On 32-bit, they're actually like about 40, 60K. They will expand as you create more objects. Because we're using some of our bit space for the generation ID, you can't create 4 billion objects. Of course, 9 bits have been gone away, so you have the 32 minus 9, 23. So you can create about 8 million objects. Since every object actually uses a fair bit of memory, normally, between like, this is not designed for a linked list node to be an object. It's designed for things like a widget, a window, like a real heavy object. So if each object's a couple of hundred bytes or a kilobyte or so, you'll run out of memory long before you can actually run out of the bit space. Yes? You can turn this off at compile time, actually. You can't turn off the checks. You can turn off the object table ID lookup, in which point the object becomes an actual pointer and you no longer have the safety. It's a compile time thing. You can turn it off. I wouldn't suggest it. It's worth paying the price. the safety is definitely, definitely worth it. So I was saying we can amortize the costs over several calls. So we can dereference once, and then you can do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 different calls without doing a dereference. So you can massively lower the cost by amortization. Catch, the C++ API can't do that. The C API can. Yes. Well, it's just a small bit of if-defing in the code. Of course, they're still pointers. We just get rid of the table and just go direct. We remove all the checks. It's a really, really simple compile time thing. Yes? There is actually a little GDB macro we include that will do the dereference for you. So you can use GDB still to point to the memory. But most developers are not dereferencing that pointer and poking around inside. If you're a toolkit developer, you will. But if you're an application developer, there's fairly little use for you looking at the internal data structures of your toolkit. So that means you're printing that pointer and looking at whatever that object has. That's also very difficult now because we have multiple inheritance. Different parts of that memory are actually mapped to different data structures, and only the object system knows which bits of memory are where. So you basically just see a blob of memory and you don't know what's in that. You have to go through EO to know what's there. It's about a 3-5% thing. I'll actually have an example a bit later. Also for methods, we also do a dynamic lookup. Each method is actually really a symbol, but inside that, it actually goes and finds the real function for that object type, because the object may override it and do its own things. If you don't support that method, that class, it will just happily return and say, no, you can't do that. So it's quite safe. What about C++? Just like C++, all of this has constructors and destructors. You can have custom constructors as well. You can do all the inheritance. You can inherit methods, override them all you want, or just use them. You can do mix-ins with your multiple inheritance. We really need multiple inheritance for a toolkit because, for example, you have a scrollable list. You need the list APIs plus all the scroller APIs that are already there in a separate scroller widget. Like JavaScript, Lua, etc., all the objects are reference counted. Well, actually, Lua is garbage collected, and I think Python might be too, and JavaScript. But they effectively work as if they're reference counted. So as long as there is a reference to that object, it stays alive. Unlike explicit, unlike C or C++, where you have to either it goes out of scope or you manually delete it. So you only have those two. Objects all have now also not just methods, they have properties. So when you have a property, you can define that it's readable or writable, i.e. you have a get or a set method, or you can have both. And when you expose that in a language, for example, like Lua, a property is actually a property. So you do object dot my property equals 10, for example. So when it goes to a dynamic language, it really, really looks like it fits in. For C and C++, it'll generate the set and get methods for that name of the property. So, and you can also, as I said, key value pair, add that. So in C, the above is how you would normally call a method. That EODO thing is a very evil macro. Don't ask. You don't want to know what's in there. But effectively, you can put a method in there. When you want to amortize your costs, you can call all three methods in one go. The second one only does one object dereference, and then everything calls on the same object. In fact, the object dereferencing has its own separate stack, separate from your normal stack, and it's managing that separate object stack by itself. So you can call multiple methods here, and that's when you only pay one object dereference cost for those three calls. It's very, very, very common in code where you do more than one thing. You'll set the text, change the color, add a child, then show the object all together. And in C++, it looks almost exactly the same, just with a C++-y kind of notation. And you'll probably, it'll be similar in Lua, replaced with a colon, and if we ever do JavaScript, something similar as well. So all of this is, all the core is in C. But we really don't like writing a lot of boiler template code. It's really painful. So what we do is we write our class definition in a thing called EO files. They're really just a very simple definition of what you inherit from, what you override, what your methods are, what their parameters are, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Then there's actually a small tool we've written that reads all these EO files and actually generates the C code for you. It can not just generate the initial C code, it can actually maintain it. So it can, for example, find if you have that function there or the method there or not. If you don't, it'll go add it to the bottom if you've gone and added a method to a class. And in fact, actually, it's safe to go and add methods to classes anytime you want, and you won't break API or ABI. So what we do is we generate not just the C code, we also generate the C++ code. So all the C++ code is actually header files. Everything's in headers. It's some really, really evil template code. And that makes it map every single method one-to-one from the C to the C++. So you call the same method, it does exactly the same thing, and the header has the wrapper in it. Of course, your C++ compiler should be smart enough to inline all of this into your code and actually get rid of the intermediate method call. And so what's happening is you're writing what looks like C++, but it's actually underneath just going straight and calling the C function. So you shouldn't have to pay any more of a cost than C, except you can't do the batch calls, like several calls with one dereference. I do not know of a way of sensibly doing that in C++ without also doing evil macros. So we don't do that anymore. And the C++ classes, once you have one, you can inherit them, override them, just as you do with normal C++, works exactly the same way. The ABI now is C instead of C++, so it's much easier to maintain ABI compatibility. You don't have to worry about, you don't have polymorphism to worry about. And I can't remember, if you add methods, you will change some of the symbols. Okay, if you add virtual methods, that's it. So you don't have to worry about this. It's not going to happen. Your ABI is much simpler. What we did have to do is we have a manual glue between the data types in EFL and C++. We support STL CXX11. Where there was a big argument about doing Boost versus CXX11. We've decided to go the standard rather than using Boost. And so all the lists and everything, you can deal with STL lists when you return a list, etc. To be perfectly honest, us developers, we don't like C++. We're not very happy about it. It's not our best friend. We're never going to port EFL to C++. Not going to happen. Over our dead bodies. It's not going to happen. We don't do that. So ask Linus Torvalds to port the Linux kernel to C++. Good luck. Pretty similar story there. But we do understand that people like C++ or other such languages, that is their preferred medium of developing. What we wanted to do is create something which creates minimum effort for us to give these people the features they need. So they can have their new and deletes and be very, very happy that everything works the same way as the rest of their code. So we're trying to be nice, and this is our attempt to be nice. The good thing about this is that then this C++ API will match the other C++ APIs that are in Tizen at the moment. So you can use the same C++ code, the same style, and then access the same lower level APIs directly via this. And we don't have to do any work to maintain it. It'll keep getting generated automatically as long as there's no bugs. So in theory, there's no maintenance. In practice, there may be bugs and we'll have to fix them. We generate the headers, don't have to worry about that, but it could misgenerate them. So if they're bugs, you can point them out and hopefully we'll fix them. We don't have to worry about adding new classes and methods and manually doing it. Anyone here who's ever maintained bindings will probably tell you that it's very, very painful to maintain bindings. Because every time you add a new class or a method, someone has to go do some manual work. There's no more of that. We already have a guy, he already just yesterday or day before committed his work on doing the Lua bindings to Git master. And all of this works just the same way as the C++. You have properties that are actual properties. It auto-generates it, and we're hoping we don't have to do any work in future to keep maintaining it. We're smiling and hoping. So when you write an EO file, they actually look something like this. I'm sorry, the font's very small. I had to fit it on one slide. You basically define, you know, a class, what you inherit from. That one here only inherits from one, from EO base. Those things there are for the generation, the prefix, and the data. So when it generates a code, it'll always prefix those things on. We defined a property here. We've got a name and a size, two of them. So that's a string. You've got a set and a get, and what kind of value, name, string char, and the size as well as an int. We've got some methods here, an activate and a disable. Really, really simple. And these are the things that override. So currently a constructor and destructor, that's all it actually does. And we've got some events here. So because this can also generate code to automatically define these events. So at runtime, you actually introspect and find out what events an object actually supports and get descriptions for them. So the C code looks something like that. Pretty simple. You just create your object, go and do some methods on it, set up some other properties, and off you go and delete. The C++ code, basically exactly the same. I've done a really simple example here. Not much difference. So why you care? You can choose now either C or C++, your choice. You don't have to pick the language you don't like. Pick the one you prefer. And eventually other languages as well, whichever your language of preference is. It has the same API. So if you don't know how to do something in, let's say, Python, you can look at how someone did it in C or C++ and duplicate exactly the same like set of methods and calls. It's very, very simple. You have both C++ support with very, very minimal chance of there being ABI problems. It lets you make your software more easily, so if you're doing the language you prefer. You get safety at runtime. Yes, it will be nice at compile time, but we don't really have a linter yet written for that. It gives yet another object model for the C world. So at the moment, the major one most people know about is GObject. This gives you another option. And it'll be coming to Tizen soon in the future. And some more complexity forever. So that's the end. Questions? Flames? Rants? Yes? For C++. For C++, you mean C++. Yeah, I'll have to find actual code for this, but I have that. I disabled it. I don't have any sample code here. Maybe I have it. That's a bit of a pain. I'll close that. Can't see my controls. Here it is. There we go. This is some auto-generated code. So this here is the code that it's generated. If you look over, where is it? There's no EODOs in that. I'm gonna find one. There it is. Here we go. Okay, I found one. This might be a bit small, but so you can see here, there's a I don't even know what that says. So the info get method there is, that would be the, no, that's not the C++ one. Oh no, it is. That's actually a C++ method. And that's just getting the debug info, and all it does is just calls the next one. So that means your C++ compiler will see that as a method, and it should inline that, and then directly your binary should be calling the C1. In fact, it has no choice. It has to do that. So there's a bunch of namespace here, et cetera, et cetera. And that's what defines that. So if you see some of the bigger ones, they actually generate a lot of template-y fun and goodness. So yeah, it just calls that method directly. There is really nothing in between. So it calls it, hands it everything else. The compiler should optimize that out. It shouldn't really exist anymore. So that's what I was meaning, that. Yes? When you start a project, you start writing it in a language, you would choose your compiler. Yes, so that's the nature of beginning a project. You choose your language. For some people, you know, I guess if you say I write an Android app, you're not thinking you choose a language, you just write it in Java. But in the general sense of I write software, you always choose a language. Some people, they always choose exactly the same one. You're writing a web app, you are choosing a language. It is HTML plus JavaScript. That is your choice. Or you can use one of the compilers that compiles C or something else, the MScriptM stuff to compile to JavaScript. But you're generally choosing a language, so yes, you choose. The old code for EFL, I can't see anything here. You know what GTK looks like? GTK. So that's what EFL looks like here from Elm Win title set, U Elm Win add title set, set icon name, and so on. That's what EFL looks like right now. All these conceptually are really method calls, and the entire object hierarchy is listed in the method call, like Elm Win something. So now for what we do is you notice we create an object and then we call a bunch of things to set properties on it. Its title and so on, eventually then somewhere further down. Oh, this one doesn't, that doesn't show it. So this is very common. So EO is mimicking a lot of this, but it's cutting, it means we can do all these in one batch without doing the object dereferences. This does an object like magic number check every time you pass in an object. Yes, the C++ generation is new. Someone had written an EFL CXX bindings. They did it manually. They created their own C++ bindings. Unfortunately, it doesn't get maintained much at all because someone has to do it manually. Now all things are auto-generated, so you no longer have to do any manual maintenance. Yes? We did have that in an earlier incarnation of this, but for several reasons, for niceties, we dropped it. So you could actually generate methods on the fly if you wanted to. So that would allow you to have a dynamic interface. You can add a method anytime you like. Though then we had op IDs. We had an operation ID. Just, it's a lot like protocol. And we did everything with var args. So basically macros stuffed var args onto a big var arg list. And we'd basically parse the var args like you parse a protocol. So you had an operation ID, then a bunch of parameters. Operation ID, a bunch of parameters. So you knew based on that op ID, you could look up what to do. If you didn't have that method, you could skip it. You could just stop doing anything if it didn't exist. So you could generate these on the fly. But we dropped that because doing returns was ugly. You had to do returns by passing the pointer where to return it. With this, of course, it's a macro that does evil stuff. You can just say x equals some value as a method value in between. So eodo object comma x equals, you know, property name get thing, you know, y equals size get, etc., as a bunch of things to query lots of things all in a row. So we kind of had it, but we dropped it. Yes. For Tizen, Qt at the moment is not part of Tizen's core. It is not a standard component. You can use it. You'd have to ship Qt with your application at this point. In Tizen IVI for Tizen 3, Qt has now been added to core. You could use it there, but in the rest of Tizen, it's not there. I use it because I like it. Then again, I wrote a lot of it, so I'm biased. I like it because I can also use it from C. I'm not forced to use C++. I have a choice. I personally prefer C by a large margin, but I understand different people have different preferences. So I would choose it because of that. And in future, we're going to have auto binding generation for many, many languages, and it means you'll have support for a language once the support's written. The support is 100% complete. It's not partial support. You don't have to wait for it to catch up. At the moment with EFL's Python bindings, which are actually quite good, you normally have to wait several weeks or months for them to actually catch up, and they're not 100% complete. So you get full completeness. So for me, that has value. So having the choice and having the full support. So an EFL is also a vastly different toolkit to Qt. They work very differently. So with Qt, you have your traditional Qt widgets, and then you have QML, which is a canvas. EFL is only a canvas. It's built on a canvas from the ground up. They are very differently designed. So in Qt, they built a canvas, but then built it all around QML. With EFL, we built a canvas and only that and nothing else. And then we built layers on top with Edge and so on, etc. So they have very different models. Also, from Qt 5, correct me if I'm right, Tiago, you don't have support for anything other than OpenGL rendering, right? Oh, if I'm wrong, sorry. yeah. But if you want to use QML, quick, you have to use OpenGL, right? Yes. With EFL, you don't. You can do both software and OpenGL. Both are fully supported. So you don't. So for example, I can. So from our first, the NX300 camera from Samsung, there is zero GPU on that hardware. There is no 3D processor. You could not use QML and Qt 5 on that hardware because it doesn't have OpenGL. Your option would be to use from software GL like Mesa, at which point your user interface will be like, you know, wading through mud. It'll be pretty slow. So here you can run it on, let's say, lower end hardware that doesn't have a GPU. We're done? Okay, thank you very much. Everyone have a good afternoon. Hope you enjoy it.